Welcome back, everybody. I hope you all had a nice break and are recharged with some coffee and some sweets. Now we have here Clemens Hübner. You may have already seen him before on the other track. Luckily, he jumped in for one of the speakers who could not attend today anymore. And we're thinking about, for his introduction, maybe we can just like, you know, replay what has been told on the other side. but no, I'm going to introduce you properly. So a warm welcome to Clemens. He works at Innovex in the area of security. He is passionate about secure development, everything that has to do with, you know, secure development lifecycle and so on. And nowadays also taking care about how to develop code securely with the use of AI and with the help of AI. We've been hearing quite a lot, specifically also in this room, about AI, LLMs, or MCP servers today, how AI can be secured in production, and so on. But what about during the development lifecycle? And this is where he will be talking about the TrustWrap security of coding assistants. I'd kindly ask you to all give Clemens a warm welcome.
Thanks. Thank you very much for the kind introduction. Great to be back on the other stage. and welcome you all to my second talk today, the talk I actually submitted. We are talking now about the security of coding assistants. And I think it was a bit introduced in the keynote this morning, and some people were complaining that the positivity was lacking. So I brought you this slide of the huge success story of code AI. So there are statistics that almost every developer in the US is using some kind of AI coding tools nowadays. Almost half of the code that is written nowadays is written with the use of AI, so they claim, and it's a huge market as everything related to Gen AI is. So that looks quite like a success story, I would say, right? So that's enough for the optimism in my talk today. Let's have a look at the other side of this huge success of code AI. So we have a lot in the news about vibe coding going wrong, about prompt injection in coding assistants, about data exfiltration in vibe coding tools. So we want to have a look at what is behind all of these vulnerabilities. What do we have to consider when we want to use AI for coding, and how it is possible to make it secure, or if it is possible, maybe at least. So, I was already introduced. My name is Clemens, work at Innovex. I think that's all you need to know. Let's dive into the topic. So, let's have a look at this rise of code AI again. So, vibe coding, this term was named in the morning already, is really a new term. I don't know if you know, but it was, I think, coined by Andrew Capati in February this year. So it's almost not very old. And he used it in this tweet about this new style of programming where you just formulate natural language requirements and do not touch any code yourself, and you just go with the vibe and see what happens and discard things and see if something works, and if not, then you try again. So this is the origin, as far as I know, of the term vibe coding. But of course, there is older types of code AI. So back in the days, we had some things that were simply auto completion, and I think that is where all this started, where a lot of these tools originate from. Some of them, TAP9, for example, now is evolving more into really code agents. But back then, it was merely I take the current line as an input, or maybe the current method, a signature, whatever, and I predict the next lines, next part of code. So that was basically auto-completion. And then the LLM hype started, and people started using ChatGPT as a Q&A helper, putting code in there, asking questions, how do I implement that? Get code back, copy it, put it in their project, and started to have this conversational approach to coding AI. And then this evolved, and we had this RAG-based assistants that were able to get more context, so being able to integrate in your project, in the files, getting the right files for the right context, and returning code snippets that were more fitting to the actual existing code base. And then the coding agents came up, where the big difference is that they are able to use some tools that they are not based on the LLM and some RAG for retrieval additional information, but were able to execute some code and also do some bigger code changes themselves. And then the next step would then be these vibe coding agents that operate mainly on natural language, where you are theoretically able to get an entire application out of them without writing a single line of code or even reading a single line of code yourself, but just explaining what you want to do, get an app, try it out, formulate some changes or start over. So this is the idea of this vibing era of coding assistance. So a lot of things going on there, and I think everyone developing software themselves or working with teams that develop software experienced a lot of this evolution there themselves, and I guess most of you also thought about how's the security of this coding assistance, and that's what we want to delve in today. So if we have a look at the attack surface of such a coding assistant. And I will use the terms coding assistant, code agent, code AI a bit as synonyms in the following. You saw the different types, and you may be able to see that some things are more relevant for the more evolved types of coding agents, but I will use them quite as synonyms. So let's have a look at the attack surface of a typical coding assistant. We have usually some kind of user prompt. So the user formulates some stuff, some requirements, maybe an entire story they want to do, maybe just fixing some bugs. The coding assistant retrieves some context, additional files, everything that is laying in the repository next to it, and it combines that to a prompt using their own logic, their own system prompt, basically what the creators of the coding assistant think is the right way to formulate this problem to the LLM. And the LLM is just getting this entire prompt as one big prompt. You all know LLMs basically just predict the next word, so everything comes in, we have a big prompt, and the LLM starts from there and predicts the next words, hopefully the answer. But this is a very, very important thing. So everything comes together in this prompt going into the LLM. And some of you might already spot the issue with different things from different parts being combined there. And then, of course, the LLM is not working out of the blue, but it was trained on some data back in the days. So I wanted to show this below this dotted line here. So also this training data might be interesting when thinking about the attack surface for our coding assistant. And then, Of course, the coding assistant has the possibility to use some tools to do some web searches, to read documentation, to maybe access a database, to access our Git log to see what was there in the past. So these things might be an output out of the LLM that decides, hey, I want to use this tool, and the coding assistant uses this tool, and it goes back to the LLM until we have some kind of output. And these outputs can be some code changes. I think that's the obvious thing that comes out of an coding assistant, actual lines of code. But the coding assistant might also be able to debug something and to execute some commands or to test our software. So this might also be part of the tool usage during the evaluation, but it might also be some kind of result of a run of the coding assistant. So that's a bit simplified, but general way to have a look at the different moving parts in a coding assistant. So now we want to think about, at these different areas, what might be the security implications we have to talk about. And I usually like to not invent everything by myself, but having a look at existing resources. So I thought maybe, As vibe coding or coding assistants are such a big thing, maybe there's something by the OWASP on that. I guess it's not a very specific problem. A lot of people using code AI. So what about, do we have a OWASP top 10 for code AI? Or do we have some checklists or some things? And it's quite hard to find resources from OWASP specific on code AI. There's a lot on Gen AI in general, or even more broader on machine learning, on AI, but it's hard to find something really for code AI. So we will talk about this later. Maybe we can change this. But for today, we need to use what is there, and I decided on have a look at the OWASP top 10 for LLM applications, very famous project. The little sister of the big OWASP top 10, specifically for LLM applications here. And in the end, a coding assistant is just an LLM application. So maybe this helps us to structure the attack surface of our coding assistant. So let's have a look at this top 10. We will not go into detail there. You might already know the list. That's a very good starting point if you are interested in LLM security. So I will not explain everything in detail, but we will really focus on what this means for our coding assistants. So the first point and the very famous starting point for LLM vulnerabilities is, of course, prompt injection. So how might prompt injections influence our coding assistants? So an attacker might use prompt injections, so inserting malicious text into the prompt that is then evaluated by the LLM to do some things the LLM or the entire agent was not designed to do. So that's basically prompt injection. And you can think about direct prompt injections, where the attacker really puts things in the prompt itself. But in our case, the user, the person that is really using the coding assistant, is basically the developer. So that he might hack himself, but there are other ways where an attacker can put stuff into our prompt. We saw this before. It's not just the user prompt. It's also the context of the project that goes into the prompt injection. And that's what is interesting for this indirect prompt injection. An attacker might try to manipulate other files that, in the end, in one way or another, land in the context to do such a prompt injection. And one very famous thing are these rules files. I really have to make sure I get the plural here, but it's rules file, so that's right. So in this rules file, you can state some general information for your coding assistant, like a specific pre-prompt where you can say, I always use this mock library for mocking in my tests, or I want this coding style, I want tabs, not spaces, something like that. That's things you can give the coding assistant as rules in this rules file. And these files are broadly shared in the internet because it's really interesting to get working pre-prompts for this coding assistant. It's very helpful if you get some good rules files. So there's a lot of things in the internet. And of course, people are trying to mess with these files. And there were some occurrences of poisoned rules files where with some UTF magic or some Unicode magic, they hidden some additional prompts here that is not visible in a normal editor, but is then evaluated by the LLM later and then changes the code, and we might plant a backdoor then. And so this is one way an attacker might plant some information in our prompt. But there are also more stealthy ways. This is a very interesting paper with a nice name, XOXO. I don't know how cross-origin context poison. Yeah, I don't know. It's they use this abbreviation because it's nice. What's it about? The attacker is here manipulating some files in a different project, but it might be in a dependency you are using in your project, and that is read then by the LLM as part of the context, or it might be in a repository next to yours. And they did some semantics preserving changes there, so the code itself was not changing, but through some reverse engineering of the weights of the LLM in the end, they were able to shift the decisions of the AI assistant in the end to develop authentication that is not secure anymore. So that's a famous attack there. And with the time, the context windows of the LLMs are getting bigger and bigger, so more and more information is loaded into the context of all the different dependencies, the documentation for that. You can imagine how easy it is to plant some information there, and it will all land in the prompt. So prompt injection is a big thing there. And then we heard in the talk before also about MCP server. So that is a way to unify this API between our LLMs and some external tools. But in the end, it's also a very convenient way to build up an ecosystem where it's very easy to integrate a new foreign MCP server into your coding tool. And even if the tool is not called, just because the MCP server advertises its capabilities, these capabilities land in the prompt because the LLM should be able to decide if they want to use this tool. And even if it's not used, it's possible that you poison your prompt with that. So in the end, each MCP server has to be trusted. We had a discussion before, how could you verify that this MCP server is trusted? I think it's hard to do. You can, of course, have a look at the current communication with the MCP server, but you will not notice that easily if something changed. So it's basically like you are downloading an .exe file and you are looking if it's doing something something bad, and then you download it again for the next year every day, and you just hope that nothing changes. So it's very hard to control and to verify. And with so that's not really a problem of MCP, but MCP is really making it easy to integrate servers you do not control and you do not know into your coding assistant. So I think that's a big issue there. Okay, let's have a look at another problem, the sensitive information disclosure. So we now know how we could influence the prompt. So now we can think about what can we do if we are able to influence or poison the prompt through a prompt injection. So you all might know the coding AI has access to all the code, of course. That might be an interesting intellectual property, of course. But it also might be able to have access to the repository, to the GitHub server, to read some secrets there, to read some logs, maybe have access to the file system beyond the current directory, reading credentials, SSH keys. So the code AI has access to some sensitive information. And there was a nice example on how to exploit this, Camel Leak, where they were not using an IDE-based coding assistant, but this GitHub Copilot chat that you are using in the web UI, where you can, for example, ask questions about pull requests. And if the pull request comes from an attacker, they might be able to place some invisible commands or comments, and then they are getting commands in their pull request. And the agent then, of course, runs with the rights of the users, and they were able to access other repos the user is able to access, or secrets, and then they needed it to extract. But we will come to that later. First of all, it's important to understand that the coding assistants and everything that is connected with the sensitive data has a possible access to this data, of course. All right, let's have a look at the supply chain issues here. Place 3 in the over top 10 for LLMs. So I think it's clear that the code AI itself gets part of your supply chain, right? So they are an important development tool. So of course they should be considered part of your software supply chain, and so are the LLMs inside. And we have the problem that is very, very obvious. LLMs are black box. It's not possible to audit them, to control what were they trained on. And if you're using some external LLMs, they change all the time. You might not even notice that some things change there, so it's not really reproducible. But of course, the code AI has also an influence on the supply chain of the project itself, because they might introduce some new dependencies. And that's where this nice thing named slop squatting came from. Some of you might know type of squatting, where developers accidentally mess up some names of dependencies, of packages. And slop squatting is exploiting that an coding assistant hallucinates, as every LLM does, and may come up with some dependencies that are not actually existing, except an attacker registered them beforehand and planted some malware in there. So there was the first occurrence of that, at least I noticed, was 2 years ago, where someone noticed that ChatGPT was always hallucinating some Hugging Face CLI library, I think it was, and they tried to register that and then see if people download it and execute a pre-install script or something like that. So that's a very big problem with hallucinating parts of your supply chain there. All right. So let's have a look at the data and model poisoning. I think it's pretty obvious. We talked about the LLMs being a black box. We do not know what the training data is in there. So model poisoning is basically if you manipulate weights in an actual model. That's only relevant if you really downloading the model yourself from Hugging Face, for example, and there are a lot of different models there, and I think it's quite hard to see what are the right one for you, and it's easy for people to manipulate weights there, so the LLM might give you some bad answers later. But the more obvious attack vector is, of course, through the training data. Everything that is used for training might contain some insecure implementations or some backdoors. So that's a big problem there. And then there's also the problem with agents. If they have access to the web and are looking for solutions for specific problems there, there's something coming up like SEO poisoning for agents, where websites try to lure agents onto their sites, giving them wrong advice there. And it's a whole topic how to convince an agent that you're the best site for it and not a search engine. but that's also a poisoning issue there. Okay, let's have a look at this improper output handling. I was mentioning this before when we talked about this sensitive information the Code AI is able to access. So now the question is, how do we get this out of there? If we are able to access a credential or some secure code, how can we extract this? And this is where the output handling of the coding agents come in place. I mean, if you have an agent that is able to do arbitrary requests to the web, then it's quite easy. But if you are restricting your coding agent more thoroughly, then you might need to leverage some other tools, disguise it in loading some images that you have put in a markdown file, for example. And you can, of course, also use this vulnerability to do some SQL injections in databases if you are able to manipulate SQL queries to execute arbitrary code. So we will come to that later. But first, let's have a second look at this CamoLeak vulnerability, where they actually used markdown images like small pixels that were then placed in the response of the coding assistant, matching the secrets they just discovered. And there was a nice bypass of the CSP that GitHub employed that should normally prevent such exfiltration, because GitHub has its own image server that's whitelisted in the CSP, and they registered the images they needed in there, and then used that to exfiltrate the data by having a look at what images were loaded through this agent. So that's a more disguised way to exfiltrate data, but that's the third part that is really important when we want to see what the big problem with coding assistants are. And there's this nice name, lethal trifecta. Simon Willison came up with that. It's quite interesting name. And his analysis is that if you have, I wanted to show you this first. If an agent has access to private data and is able to communicate externally and is also able or exposed to untrusted content, then in this combination, you really have a problem, because it can be manipulated to access data and exfiltrated out there. And that's exactly what we have. If we have a prompt injection, then we are able to use this untrusted content to do actions that are not intended. We have this sensitive data disclosure, of course, we have with coding assistants, and we have this ability to communicate externally. And I think that's the important thing when thinking about how to prevent this lethal trifecta. We will not be able to solve prompt injection. I will come to that later. We want the coding assistant to have access to the data. That's what makes it valuable. So we really need to focus on this communication. So, but we will cover this later in the countermeasures if I'm having time. So let's go a bit faster. The agency thing, we already had a glance at it. So just to recap, an agent is just an LLM with a goal and the possibility to plan things and to execute the call of the LLMs multiple times. But the important thing is it has access to tools. And for a coding agent, this means it has access to a shell, maybe, to execute some commands, to run tests, to see if everything is working anymore. To access logs, to maybe access Jira, the database, everything there. And if you combine this usage or this access to tools with the possibility of prompt injection, then an attacker might do some confused deputy attacks, where he uses the big capabilities of the agent on yeah, abusing the tools that are accessible. And I think the famous example for that was Weblit in Summer. Most of you might know this, where this vibe coding agent was called out in social media, and because it deleted an entire production database because it panicked, it later said. So it had access to this prod database, it deleted everything there, and then to cover it up, it produced some fake data, it lied about it. It's really fun to read it. if you're not involved, then I'm sorry. But for external people, it's really interesting to read. And that shows if and that was unintentionally, right? So no attacker involved here. It was just the problem of the LLM. You can imagine what this means if an attacker really tries to do this on purpose. So that's the problem there. All right, system prompt leakage. There was some discussion in the talk before. I think we can sum this up very quickly. System prompts can be leaked. There's nothing to do about it. And you should always consider your system prompt as public. And I think that's one more commonly known. So I do not really see a security issue for coding assistants here. Similar with this vector and embedding weaknesses. So coding assistants use some vector databases to get additional context. Attackers might use this to manipulate what goes into the context and what not. But with the bigger context windows, this might not even be necessary anymore. But there are also examples on how this works. But now let's come to the point number 9, and I think it's sad that it's so late in this list, because I think that's the most interesting part, or what most of you thought about when talking about security of coding assistants, because we think about what is the code actually doing, how secure is the code that the coding assistant is doing, and that's what is basically the misinformation coding assistants are delivering. So let's have a look into that in detail. So how secure or what is the quality of code coming out of this coding assistant? So there's a lot of code coming out there. So there's a lot of studies about that. There is a general decrease in code quality visible. More code is generated. The code churn, so how often is code changed and deleted again, is really increasing. You can see this in this study from CodeClear, GitClear here. More and more code is added. Code is changed more often. And the refactoring of the code is getting less and less. That might be a quality problem, but maybe it's just a different way that vibe coding is working. So it's different than today's, and maybe it's a bad sign. But I would not. I think you cannot say for sure. So let's have a look really at the security issues here. So there's a big study from VeroCode from the summer where they asked over 100 different models to write simple code exercises, code tasks, and almost half of it failed by introducing really some basic over top 10 weaknesses there. Also some weaknesses I really thought that might be gone nowadays are coming up there. But what's really the interesting thing here is because they had a look at that many models there, they could compare the newer models from this year to older models, 2 years old or something like that. And while other properties of the models are getting better, security is not improving there. So the newer models are not really better than older. And there's a lot of research going on in this field. One project I really like is Backspanch. I think it's from ETH Zurich. They came up with an open source project where they evaluated different models, and you can have a look at the tasks the model is given in there. And but it had a similar result there when they published it this May. 62% of all solutions were either incorrect, so maybe that's better, or they were correct and had a security vulnerability in there. But even of the correct solutions, around half of them were insecure. So you can have a look at the leaderboard on their website. It's quite interesting. They run it again for the new models as well. But you really see that correctness and security is not a really high value there. But of course, it's hard to compare it. So like, what is the value of an average developer? Is it more than 50%? Is it less? Have a look at the tasks, try it out yourself, and then decide. So I think it's not a good good value there, but it's hard to say how to compare it. And of course, it's depending on what model you use and what you are trying to implement. So for example, there was this study that DeepSeek, if you are implementing some code that is related to Tibet, for example, suddenly had quite more security bugs in it than if you're developing something politically neutral. So that's quite interesting there. It's hard to tell if it's on purpose or if it's just baked in. You can just not tell with LLMs, right? So yeah, these are some of the problems with the code coming out of coding assistance. I tried to group the most common flaws with code AI into top four of code AI or something like that. These are really the most common things you see when you find security bugs in AI-generated code. You often see this happy path bias, so it just tries to fulfill the functionality you tell them. They are missing basic security controls if you're not explicitly state that you want them. They are just trying to build the feature. We have this problem of learned insecurity based on the insecure code it was learned on. Also a lot of legacy patterns, old cipher that are reused, old libraries that are reused, things you see on Stack Overflow that maybe are not perfect. All this is learned insecurity. You have, of course, the problem that the LLM or the coding assistant might not get the whole architecture of your app if you do not tell them. So they might not understand the trust model or the roles and permissions, and they make logical flaws. That's a problem there. And of course, you have the problem with hallucination. You might catch this because the app is not running, but there were also occurrences of using APIs wrong, using secure flags in APIs wrong. So in the end, it was not secure anymore. And of course, the slop squatting problem I introduced before. So, but the problem with that is, and that's where I come to the title of my talk is, maybe that's all fine if we use it correctly, but are we aware of these problems? And there's this nice study from Stanford. It's almost 2 years old now, but they checked if people write more insecure code with AI assistance, and they did. But the more interesting thing in there, and I think that is still valid nowadays, even though they wrote more insecure code, they were more convinced that the code they wrote with AI is better than if they wrote it themselves. So this is this trust trap I see with using AI, that people are not aware of the insecurities that comes with this code. So this is about the misinformation. I really need to hurry up. I think unbound consumption, that's not really relevant for coding assistance. Let's skip that. And let's have a look at a short look at the countermeasures. How can we deal with this problems? And I tried to think about how good can we solve the different problems we just discovered. I think there are some problems like prompt injection, like data poisoning, that are just inherent to the usage of LLMs, and it is currently not possible to really prevent them. You can only mitigate these problems. Others you might be able to prevent if you carefully design your permissions and the access rights they have, and other things you can prevent by conventional countermeasures. So for supply chain, it's a big problem, but we have some ideas, and I think they are not so different than if you develop software yourself. So I will not be able to go in any detail here, but I will share the slides later, so have a look at them here. I also have some information on what I think covers the entire process when you want to use your a coding assistant yourself, from the right prompt engineering, from reviews and tests, but also from designing before that. But I think I'm a bit over time, so I hope you got to know the different areas. Code AI has to be secured. Had a look at the different different areas, and now I'm happy to take some questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Clemens. Are there any questions from the room? Yes.
So thank you for your talk. It's a bit of a provocative question. How should there be any positive movement in IT security or in coding security if you have when this whole AI thing started, we had a bunch of code which was not secure and a little code which was secure. So as you told, the Stack Overflow effect. And now it's like the AI learned from this, created code which is mostly insecure, put it back into the wild, and the AI keeps learning from this. So how do you think is it possible to get out of this loop?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, is it really so different than how new developers learned? They are also not just looking at the perfect code and learn from that, but they are also looking at bad examples, at bad Stack Overflow questions. So maybe that's not so big of a difference. I think it's important to understand what the limitations are and then to build processes around it to use it in the right way. I don't think that Code AI will be the end of software security, but it will also not be the beginning of software security. It's just a different tool, a different kind of writing code, and you have to continue with the processes before and after that, just as today.
Thank you very much. I would say the next question could be taken offline. Thank you very much, Catherine. And for the second and last time for today, a warm thank you to Clemens.
Thank you.